Okay, well, I'm just kind of doing a summary of what I did last time only. I'll go over that quickly because I found more interesting stuff at the end, which is nicer to talk about. So I'll start by agreeing with the people who say that the Russia invasion comes down after Jesus returns. I've always been brought up believing that. So this whole Gog and Magog, whether they're Russia or just the northern powers, I believe that happens after Jesus comes when they're dwelling in peace and safety. And I'm afraid, I love Graham, but this European beast, I'm going to talk about that. So I believe it's actually the same as campaign 1 and 2. And I think campaign 5 is the same as the Gogian one. It's all the ones that come down against Jesus when he's there ruling in, as in Psalm 2. That's when they come down. So
that's good because I, it's good to have that contrast pointed out, that, you know, from what you said last week, because now we're here today, and so it's good to see that you see it differently from what I just said. That's the whole idea of this, to just present as many ideas that people have as we can today.
Yeah. Well, Harry Whittaker had a very strong point of view that was different, and Amy Norris had another one that was different.
Yes, I meant to read Harry Whittaker, but I didn't.
Anyway. Well, I sort of quote Harry Whittaker a lot because I really like his ideas. Okay.
His historical approach is a revelation, is John Thomas.
Okay.
So what I'm showing here is the traditional continuous historic approach. So you've got, as I said last time, you've got the start of the image all sort of nicely in proportion, covering that span of history, the Greeks, Romans, Persians. Oh, not Romans, sorry, the others. But then the Romans, like, they continue the legs to the last days and say that the toes or horns come out of the Roman Empire in Europe. However, this Eastern and Western division of the Roman Empire, it didn't continue very long. The Western Roman Empire was dissolved in 476 by Odoacer. So this was the start of the... he was the first king of Italy. And he was actually an Arian Christian. Does anyone know what that is?
Yeah.
They believe... they don't have the Trinity.
That's right. They believe the same as us.
Yeah.
No Trinity. So, although the Roman Catholic Church did continue its doctrine of the Trinity, like Constantine was the one going around killing people if you don't believe in the Trinity. But that softened, and so you actually had two Roman emperors who were Arian Christians and believed in the Trinity, and you had the first king of Italy, same as us, no Trinity, and you had the whole family of, what were they called? The Italian family who ran the country till the 7th century, the Lombards, they were also Arian Christians. That's interesting. Mm. And so when this is Odoacer, they call Italy then the name of that king, this whole Western Europe split into a zillion little countries. So it wasn't like one leg continuing down. And then on the other side, you had the Eastern Roman Empire or Byzantine Empire, and it just didn't continue as one line either. It fell to the Sassanids, the Arabs under Muhammad, Rashidun, the Umayyad Caliphate, the Crusaders, Saladin, the Ottoman Turks, and then the whole British regime who split it up as well. So if you're going to, and I'll just point out also that there are, sure, everyone knows an image has two legs, but it also says there were thighs, and there's two thighs, but the Bible says the Greeks were split into four, you know, there were four wings on the leopard. So, but, you know, there's not four thighs on the image. So there's only, like, a point. You only make a point of two legs if the Bible says there's a point of two legs. and the Bible doesn't say that at all. So I was going to try and really split into multiple legs after this. I was going to try and draw it, and I didn't have time, so I just stuck him on the centipede because they have lots of legs. So that's what happened to East and Western Europe. So to understand this whole thing of the toes and the seven heads and the mystery Babylon and the harlot, there's basically two ideas. There's either mystery Babylon is Rome or it's Jerusalem. The harlot is either the Catholics or it's Israel. The beast, which is and really what we're looking at with the beast is the last phase of the beast, the horn bit. Because we know the beast was a conglomerate of all the nations that ran through history. So is that the ten horns or the ten toes, are they Catholics ruling ten EU nations, or are they ten Arab nations that surround Israel? And we're told to count the number of the beast, and another way we can do that is the Bible lists, in its lists of the enemies of Israel, all these Arabs, it actually has lists in several spots with ten nations around Israel who hate her. So,
And that from your previous talk, can I just mention that? You mentioned how when they went into Israel, God said you're going to destroy the Hivites and the Perizzites and all that. Ten of them. Mm-hmm. Way back then there were ten. Mm-hmm. And now they're still mentioning ten.
Yeah, actually, it gets complicated because...
That's a shame. I like these things. I remember that.
The land promised to Abraham initially in Genesis 15 is a land of ten nations, and it's the complete area from the Euphrates to the Nile.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When they go into the promised land of Canaan, they're specifically told you can have this bit, and it's an inner circle that's not as big.
Right.
And it's the land of seven nations, which, and a nation is a mountain. So Israel sits on seven mountains or nations. So, and it becomes the harlot that sits on seven hills, because that's their bit, the inner bit, and then the outer bit is the Arab. So that's why this whole beast thing, it's the promised land of seven and ten. And that's why you've always got a beast with seven heads and ten horns. It's always that bit. That's what it's talking about.
So you think the harlot is Jerusalem, do you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Harry thinks that too. Yeah.
Oh, Harry.
It's actually good to have Harry's backup. I don't like trashing other people's ideas, but Harry does it nicely. I'll just read out what Harry says. On the strength of this, this is the theory that the Babylon and the harlot and the horns are all the corrupt Roman Catholic Church. He says, on the strength of this idea, there have been many confident expectations of a sensational increase in papal power in the last days. The daring character of these speculations is hard to match in Bible prophecy. One is left guessing as to how the Babylonian harlot riding the beast and then ravaged by the ten kings can represent the papacy controlling the Roman Church and then destroyed by those who are then themselves subject to it. Indeed, how harlot and beast can both be identified with the apostrophe of Rome deserves the name mystery nearly as much as the woman in the vision. So in other words, the typical view is that this woman is the harlot, is the corrupt Roman Catholic Church, and this beast is also the Roman Catholic horse with the ten horns, the ten European leaders or popes or whatever, who come and attack the harlot, which is, that would be the church attacking the church. And that's why Harry Whittaker says it's just absurd.
Except that it has already happened in the past and Harry forgot that.
But in the Bible, everything about, it's all about Israel getting attacked by her enemies in the last days. It's not about, you know, that at all. So, okay. So the focus of end time prophecy is the promised land, not Europe. This is my argument. And it's Jerusalem that becomes Mystery Babylon.
Where do you get that term from?
Mystery Babylon is in Revelation 18.
Okay.
It was Jerusalem that was meant to be God's people, but they became corrupt. And they took on the ways of Babylon, this nation that, you know, overwhelmed them, and they just became like them. So now she's Mystery Babylon. I'll show some quotes in a minute. It was the chosen city, but it became like Babylon. And we can all become like Babylon. Like, Jerusalem is the mother of harlots. It's not to say that God's happy with the Catholic Church, because, you know, we know they have corrupt doctrine and teaching, but so do a lot of other people. So does, you know, we can be caught up in it too. That's why she's the mother of harlots. She's not the only harlot. Actually, a lot of the language in Revelation 18 describes Tyre, how God condemned Tyre for her harlotry as well. So she got caught up in trade, and so she is described in the same language. Okay, so beast turns on harlot. So let's just read a bit of the language of Revelation 17. This is... they have one purpose and give their power and authority to the beast. Come, they say. Oh, and that is so similar to what is the language of Psalm 83, which is also talking about this one purpose. Come, they say, let us destroy them as a nation, so the name of Israel is remembered no more. With one mind they plot together, they form an alliance against you. So these ten horns in Revelation have one purpose, and the ten Arabs in Psalm 83 have one purpose. Revelation 17:16. The beast and the ten horns you saw will hate the prostitute. They will bring her to ruin and leave her naked. Then they will eat her flesh and burn her with fire. And this burn her with fire is a phrase from the Old Testament Leviticus. This is what happens to the daughter of a priest if she was a harlot and unfaithful. Her punishment was to be burned with fire. And Zion is described as like a virgin who became a harlot. To what shall I liken you, O virgin daughter of Zion? They hiss and shake their heads at the daughter of Jerusalem. Is this the city of which they said the perfection of beauty? And another one, to Jerusalem, they will burn down your houses and inflict punishment on you in the sight of many women. I will put a stop to your prostitution and you will no longer pay your lovers. So we've got, you know, the Old Testament is full of this likening Israel to the harlot, Jerusalem. So I believe this mystery Babylon in Revelation 18 is not Rome, but Jerusalem, and I'll just read a couple more quotes along the same lines. Confront Jerusalem with her detestable practices and say, your ancestry and birth were in the land of the Canaanites. Your father was an Amorite, your mother a Hittite. You became very beautiful and rose to be a queen. And your fame spread among the nations. You increased your promiscuity to include Babylonia, which means they took on the ways of Babylonia.
Mm-hmm.
A land of merchants, and that's what Revelation 18 is about, the land of merchants. But even with this, you are not satisfied. I'm filled with fury against you, acting like a brazen harlot. I mean, we've just got this over and over against about Jerusalem. There's nothing to connect it to the Catholic Church anywhere in the Old Testament. And in her was found the blood of the prophets and the saints and all who were slain on earth. That's in Revelation 18 about the harlot. About Babylon. And that is like so similar to Matthew, which says, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you. So we have the Bible equating this killer of saints and prophets with Jerusalem, not with the Catholic Church. And of course, what gets everyone a bit confused is this badly translated verse in Revelation 17, which says, which should say, the woman you saw is the great city having kingship among the kings of the earth. If you read it, you'll read it, it says she rules over them, but it doesn't mean that. It should read, she just has kingship amongst them, like she's caught up in their ways. She's just become one of them. So this is how I believe the image is, and Harry believes it. There are gaps in the prophecy. So there's not the two long legs that continue down. It's all about Israel under foreign rule. So when they're not under foreign rule, or when they self-rule, as they did with the Hasmoneans, that's what the image is all about. That's why the legs are then back in proportion, because the land is desolate. The Jews are out of it for, I don't know, how many thousand, nearly 2,000 years. And so that's what it's all about. And the relevance of the Babylonian sort of epitome of the kingdoms of men ruling Israel, if you look, this was the kingdom of Babylon. It almost mirrors the land promised to Abraham. And it was, you know, for 70 years it ruled over Jerusalem and Israel, and they got caught up in all their worship. That's how... This is Jerusalem here, Babylon, Nineveh or Mosul, that whole area. So it just consumed the people who were meant to be worshippers of God. They became Babylon, Mystery Babylon. And, of course, this is not the only prophecy with a gap in it. Nearly all the prophecies in Daniel have this gap. You've got the 70-week prophecy, 70 weeks of years, and that actually predicted the coming of Jesus the first time to the year. We know it began in 457 when the word went out to return and build up to Ezra, and you add your 7 sevens to 62 sevens, and then when Jesus started his ministry, he came saying, the time is fulfilled and the kingdom of heaven is at hand. What time was fulfilled? It was the time of this Daniel prophecy about 70 weeks. And Jesus was cut off in the middle of the last seven. So there were 70 sevens that decreed for your people and your holy city to finish transgression, put an end to sin, atone for righteousness, to bring in everlasting righteousness. So this didn't happen when, you know, Jesus came the first time. This prophecy also had this long gap here. So Jesus, this last seven was cut in half when Jesus was cut off in the middle. Then you've got this gap. So that's leaving a period at the end of 3.5 years. That's what Revelation is all about, this 3.5 year gap. It's like 42 months, 1,260 days, however many ways you want to say it, it's getting your attention to say, I'm explaining now this bit at the end of Daniel's prophecy after the gap. Okay. So really I've covered this. It's just another way of depicting that was the land of seven that Israel were promised in Joshua when they went into the promised land. And this outer bit, like, actually that's a good map from Graham, showing the outer Arab enemies around them, that's the full land of the ten. So the land of seven and ten is the promised land. Yeah, which is the beast with seven heads and ten horns. Which actually gets really complicated in Revelation 17. Because the seven heads, it says they're seven mountains and they are also seven kings. So it's applying to two things. It's applying to the place and the inhabitants. And it took me ages to get my head around all this. But it says there are, there are seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come. But when he does come, he must remain for only a little while. The beast who once was and now is not is an eighth king. He belongs to the seven and is going to destruction. So it's sort of like a riddle. But if you start with, you know that, like, so at the time this was written, at the time of John, five of the kings had already been, one is. So we know the one is, the power ruling over Israel was Rome, and one is yet to come. So that's why we've got this long gap until this last bit at the end when the final beast is going to again rule over Israel for a short time. So that's why I've drawn these heads like the old rulers over Israel. So we had Assyria, Egypt, Babylon, Rome and the Greeks. And then the one is to be, I believe, is an Isis-type entity at the end who's not ruling over Israel yet, but it's only for a short time because in Revelation 11, we've got the two witnesses. They've got the power to fire on their enemies for 3.5 years, and they only get trampled underfoot for 3.5 days. So it's just a short time that Israel get wiped out at the end for. And it's exciting because there's never been, since the Bible days, the Old Testament, there hasn't been a time when there could be these 10 powers in the land of Israel because, you know, we had these big empires who just controlled the whole lot of the land. But since Israel came back, the whole land was divided up, and now you can, you don't have to bother, but, you know, you can say, well, there's got to be like 10 horns around Israel. It's something that's now a possibility when it wasn't for 2,000 years it wasn't. So that's exciting. But whilst there are 10 horns, there is a little horn in Daniel 7 which leads the attack. So I don't, I'll just read it out. I also wanted to know about the 10 horns on its head and about the other horn that came up before which 3 of them fell. The horn that looked more imposing than the others and that had eyes and a mouth that spoke boastfully. As I watched, this horn was waging war against the holy people and defeating them. So it's not the whole 10 horns waging war. It's actually the little horn. Then when you come to Revelation 13, it's talking about the beast. And it's using the same language. So I think what happens is the little horn of Daniel morphs into the entire beast of Revelation 13. And we're told that the beast was given a mouth to utter proud words and blasphemies to exercise its authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to blaspheme God and to slander his name and dwelling place and those who live in heaven. It was given power to wage war against holy people, God's holy people, and to conquer them. So we've got, you know, the blasphemy, the boasting, the power to defeat God's holy people. So here it's the little horn, and here it's the beast. So I think it's the little horn becomes the beast that Revelation is talking about in chapter 13. So, who spoke on Sunday? At Westfield?
Ross.
Yes, he mentioned Graham's old present day events. And Graham was looking for this Arab power to come against Israel, and he was like saying maybe it's the PLO. Well, he's dead right. Like, there's got to be this power that comes up. And at the moment, to me, it's looking like, really looking like ISIS.
Yes.
So this is why I'm quite excited here, because ISIS fits the type. And as Rosemary mentions, there's stuff happening in Mosul, which is the old Nineveh.
Yeah.
And I see this last beast as a latter-day Assyrian, because it's, you know, this head that now is not in the prophecy, so it wasn't the Romans. But it had been, so I think it was this Assyrian type, because we're told about the latter-day Assyrian. and yet will be. So all the imagery really fits it. And what happened to the Assyrians in Mosul? In 612 BC, the Assyrians received a fatal wound from Babylon, and they were almost wiped out. Then they retreated to Haran and got finally wiped out in 609. But in 612 in Nineveh, they got their fatal wound, and that's what's talked about in the book of Nahum. So then I think the same thing's about to happen to Isis in the same place. I think they're about to get their fatal wound, but this time everyone will think they're nearly wiped out, but they're going to rise up, pop out, maybe attack Israel. It's a possibility, you know. Yeah. But let's look at how it can fit. One of the heads of the beast seemed to have had a fatal wound, but the fatal wound had been healed. The whole earth was filled with wonder and followed the beast. And when it says the whole earth, we're talking about the land of Israel, Eretz Israel, as we've been talking about this with Duncan. It's the earth, and the sea that borders it are the nations round about. That's how, you know, Turkey and the others. So there are people of the earth and there are people of heaven. So it's the people of the earth that follow the beast, that, you know. It's not, it doesn't mean every person, it just means those caught up in the earthly, the baddies. From you, Nineveh, has come forth one who plots evil against the Lord and devises wicked plans. Nothing can heal you, your wound is fatal. That was the prophecy in Nahum. And it's interesting, the president of Turkey said the battle to liberate Mosul will begin on the 19th of October, that's in a few days' time, so that'll be interesting to watch. That, so that's one way that Isis fits the type. They're, I think they'll get a fatal wound. And they speak boastfully against God and Israel, which, you know, all those Arabs that hate them do. But this is what al-Baghdadi said. With the help of Allah, we are getting closer to you every day. The Israelis will soon see us in Palestine. Oh, he said that a couple of years ago, but, you know, still there thinking. The beast of Revelation 13, it forces people to worship it or die. It ordered them to set up an image in honour of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. The second beast was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast so that the image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. And there's been a lot about ISIS. This is just a headline. ISIS kills Christians for refusing to convert to Islam. I mean, this is something that's really fitting that prophecy. Also, we're told that people will be forced to use their currency to trade. They could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of the name. Just a few days ago, October the 10th, Nineveh, the Iraqi media outlets reported on Monday that the Islamic State prohibited the Iraqi dinar currency from Mosul in order to compel its people to adopt ISIS currency. It's interesting here that on this silver coin, that little picture there is the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem on their coin. So, you know, it's clearly one of their objectives. And, you know, one of the prophecies that is just before Jesus comes, and I think is a sign to us, is the Euphrates drying up. No one ever talks about that. But it says, you know, and then it says that the Euphrates dries up to prepare the ways of the kings of the east. Behold, I come as a thief. So that's something we see before Jesus comes. And the Euphrates drying up is not, like, everything's so symbolic in Revelation. I don't think we have to look for a literal drying up of the Euphrates. For example, when God says a river dries up, he means it's the power of the area, and I'll just read an example of how that is. Jeremiah 46, Egypt rises like the Nile, like rivers of surging waters. She says, I will rise and cover the earth. I will destroy cities and their people. So God describes rulers rising up as rivers. So when the river dries up, that's the rulers losing their power. And so this, the Euphrates Valley has been the area of for ISIS. This is a map of, you know, where they've had all their strongholds. There's the Euphrates, that's the Tigris. So Mosul is on the Tigris River, and that's Raqqa's on the Euphrates, Aleppo. But they're losing their power in the Euphrates area. It's drying up. So ISIS is drying up. The Euphrates is drying up because that was their area, even though it's brief. I mean, people are looking at, like, the Turks or something because they had it for a long time. But I think we're looking at things in this brief 3.5-year period that Revelation's talking about. So, oh, hang on. I thought I had more, but that's it. So they proclaimed their caliphate in April 2013, so that'll sort of be 3.5 years they've proclaimed their caliphate, which I think is a really significant time period too. So I think we really are in the last days, because I think ISIS can fit. You know, and oh, that's right, I thought I included it in my notes. The Revelation 16 says it's poured out a vial on the throne of the beast. So let's say this beast is ISIS. So the throne of the beast is this area here. And it says, you know, it was turned to darkness. And you've got all these plagues, you've got all this yucky stuff happening there, which are the vials of Revelation 16 on the throne of the beast, which is this whole area. That's why it's such a mess. So, you know, you've got your refugees flooding out as a witness to the world. It's like the plagues on Egypt, only now it's the plagues on the throne of the beast. And we should be getting, this is the last days, this is, Jesus is about to come. We've got to tell people, you know.
Yeah.
So that's it.